Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a sustainability presentation from April 2018. Dr. Riediger Fox, CEO, Sympatex Technologies GmbH presents Sustainable Collections, Green is the New Blue Ocean.
Welcome, first of all. My name is Riediger Fox, CEO of Sympatex, and in the next roughly 30 minutes, all I'm planning is to share a thought with you. I just realized I might be at the total wrong event with my talk, but it might be worthwhile still to stay about 30 minutes, because I'm here at the Performance Days, and I will not talk about performance. I will talk on things which are perhaps on top of all the performance discussion we have seen over the last couple of years. I will mainly talk about an idea which have gradually taken some space in the discussion, which is, what can we do with the textile industry? Can we actually go towards what's called closing the loop? And to start, I personally believe sustainability is not a moral or ethical question. That might sound a bit provocative, because at the end it is, but as long as we stay in that question, we don't look at other reasons why sustainability might make sense. And you have seen it in the invitation. I named the talk Green is a New Blue Ocean simply because I believe we will see a major shift in this industry, which has nothing to do with single-digit growth numbers or anything else, or performance, but we're in front of a fundamental change in the industry, and I'm not quite sure whether we have all embarked already on that journey. The second misunderstanding, I believe, is sustainability is not a mega trend. People sometimes talk about mega trends, and these are things which come in and come out and happen. I think we're in front of something which is not just a fashion thing, which is not just a temporary thing. And to start with, and this is probably as valid for all the other industries, we need to recognize where we are coming from when we talk business, when we talk fashion industry, shoe industry, but also car or whatever. And I dare to say one of the fundamental thinkers in explaining us why we do the things, how we do them, has probably been Adam Smith. About 250 years ago, he started thinking about economy and many paradigms we have in our heads still, how to run a company, how to run a brand, how to improve, and so on. Basically, came from his ideas. And while many people criticize him for the outcome, his initial thoughts weren't that bad, because he recognized more people live in cities and we need to feed the nation. So we need to increase wealth to increase productivity. You start thinking about efficiency. The thing we always look at our companies, how we can get faster and lead times down and all these things, it started there. And his second assumption was, and you might smile today, but his second assumption was that the markets, the competitive markets, will ensure a fair distribution. And we need to recognize that this is basically the fundamental ideas how we still run business today. It's about 250 years old. And what we have derived from that is what I call a kind of standard economic model, which are beliefs that, first of all, we look at companies that close systems. We look at, how can I improve my brand a little bit more? How I can sell a bit more textiles on this side or get the next wave a bit earlier than my competitors? But we rather look at my company. We also are used, and this is probably less today than initially, but the initial concepts came from pretty local markets. We didn't have a global market. So our economic thinking today, running a business case, is also pretty much, this is my market. That's why companies more often fail in very short periods of time, because they completely underestimate dramatic market changes. And I will pretty much talk now in a few minutes on dramatic market changes. We also looked a lot in a rather transactional business. And in our industry, we still are. There's a lot of transactional stuff we're doing. We mostly offshored it to other countries. But innovation has not been the key driver, even though now we talk a lot about it. But the initial concepts came from a time when it was just pretty much repetitive work. And lastly, and probably the most important one I want to touch now, we didn't realize the limits of growth concept. And I'm born in the mid-60s. That was when I was in school. We had the first Club of Rome report saying, oh, there are limits of growth. And yes, I had a great teacher talking about it. And we became a little bit passionate about it. But it was like, okay, yeah, but. And I think we're still in this most mode of, okay, yeah, but. And then I go back in our offices and think, yeah, but it might not impact us. And of course, when I was in school, that was a couple of decades ago, and until now, I was more or less right, because it seems until now it didn't impact us so much. So what we have created in the last, I dare to say, 30 years, is then a kind of vortex where we still try to improve the system. Oh yeah, how can I get the lead times a bit down? How can I shift from 2, 4, 6, 8 collections into 10, 12, 13, 36, whatever? So we are still in this mindset on how can I get a little bit better than last year, a little bit faster. And that system is running everywhere. This is not symptomatic to textile industry, but since we recognize there's competition, we quickly go into price pressure and then run through the different departments, whether that's purchasing, administration, our own manufacturing cost or whatever. Now, the problem comes when we started then going into automation, lean, offshoring is probably for our industry a relatively important or very important part. We came to a point that this only works when we grow. This only works when we get shorter and shorter product life cycles. This only works when we can get to a certain point of standardization. But I don't know about you, but at least us, me, in the different industry I was in before, I was in electronics, I was in automotive, in aerospace, and now in textile, it's the same feeling. There's something where we believe we might still do a little bit better, but not a lot. There's this kind of notion of, well, how long we can still go on in getting faster and cheaper and so on. So the question for me is, are we pursuing the one and only right model, or is there actually something out there which already indicates us what's coming next? And when we honestly look in Adam Smith's assumption, and it was pretty much this one I mentioned before, we looked at singular companies as single actors. Yes, there's competition, but rarely we look at the big pictures of our industries. We looked at supply chains. A logical food chain where the bigger eats the smaller one, puts pressure on it. We look at local markets. Now, this local might today be a larger local one or different local one, international one, but still. I mentioned the transactional work, but especially we look at an economy as closed system. This is my company. I have a business case. We buy something in. We get something out. We get money in. We pay our employees. And we have a lot of discussion at the moment on what is economy 4.0, and we go all digital and viral and whatsoever. The only question is that really the whole story? And when I look at the different parameters, I need to recognize when I look at today's industry that companies act within open systems. We are no more that company. I can look at my thing. If somebody else invents a new way of whatever, dyeing a textile or anything, massive industrial changes can happen. And I worked as a supplier to Nokia. I still remember the board meetings in Finland when the board of Nokia was still convinced that the mobile phone is mainly for phoning and will never replace a computer, and we know the history. Now, that period of ignorance of what's coming up until the outcome of losing a 70% market share into basically negligence took about 2 to 3 years. And I'm talking hardware industry here. I'm not talking the Googles replacing Yahoo. I'm not talking the digital. I'm talking hardware. And this was not because the guys were stupid. This was because we have an inherited built-in processor which loves to be used what we know and try to extrapolate from our history what's coming next. And sometimes we might not see the obvious, coming up to us. We look now at prosumers and supply networks, or we should, but still we have purchasing departments which are under pressure to find the best, cheapest solution, and they just look at the price level. And we do it, and many others do it, everybody does it, because that's what we are used. We are used as supply chains till the point that we realize all of a sudden there might be a supply base which is getting stronger than we are, and because we have annoyed them for a while, they don't want to work with us anymore. I don't need to talk on global markets, but perhaps for a moment, are we really in a transactional business? Or aren't we requested to constantly be creative, to constantly innovate new ways on pleasing the client, impressing the client, or improving the way we do our business? And lastly, we need to recognize we are in an open system. And I'm not going now in the physics of an open system, but the problem in an open system is that if you only look at your subsystem, you might be washed away by things which happen from outside which you don't haven't had a look at it. And I will jump now in a few numbers. I don't want to bore you. I'm probably pretty curious how many of those of you knew those numbers. How many people live on this planet at the moment? 7 billion? Roughly, pretty precise. 7.5, but it runs fast. I'm always saying I'm a great generation because when I was born, it was half of what we are today. Hopefully, I'm the only generation who will see doubling the world's population in a lifespan, probably even tripling. We started at about 3 billion in the 60s. 50 years later, we're at 7 billion. And in the 2050s, we will probably be at the 10 billion. Might be 10.5, might be 9.5, but most of these people are already born. And we know the dying rate, so it's pretty likely we reach that number. Now, the interesting part is we need to recognize when Adam Smith was there, history has never seen this before. So why bother? There was no issue of adding up things to a total. No, I could look at my company and everything wasn't interesting to me. But within one lifespan, we can see doubling, tripling population of the planet. And if we would be honest, and we would start learning or relearning, adding up things, and not only looking at our niche, we would come across a few interesting numbers, and I just picked in a few. It's a growing collection. We started about a year and a half ago. You find most of them in the press. Some might be wrong by 10, 20%, but the order of magnitude should be right. We produce every year 80 billion clothing. Some people say 100 billion. That's roughly between 10 and 15 per person on the planet from the baby till the adult. How many shoes we are producing? Anybody knows? Not the Sympatex guys, because I bore them all the time with it. Any idea? 23 billion. It's about 3 pairs per person on this planet. We have the 7 point whatever. Interesting enough, on my train this morning, I made a rough cut calculation. I think it's right. I checked it 3 times. When you align them, the average female shoe size is about 37.5. Male is 40 if you make them the average. You align them, a year's production of shoes goes 15 times to the moon and back. Every freaking year. And we have discussions on growth. I mean, this is raw material we use. This is garbage we create, except if we produce tons of cupboards on top and hide them. But the order of magnitude in terms of material, what we are currently doing, and this is just summing up. You find the data on the internet. We didn't invent it. 97% roughly is made from new material. 2% from recycled, and about 1% we could call a closed-loop system. 23 billion pairs of shoes out of new material every freaking year. 63% is roughly from synthetic, 11% is cotton. Cotton forecast being rather stable, so the 67 with the growth rate, synthetics will grow probably in the 70-ish, and then we have others, leather, whatever. I mean, it's funny. Whenever I talk to people, and you are industry guys, probably much more than I am, but we don't know these numbers. Nobody talks on these numbers. Nobody looks at the big thing. The side effects. And these are numbers which are circulated at the moment, the best ones I got. We are creating, we are responsible for about 8% of the global CO2 global warming as an industry. We risk to double by 2030 and raising this to third time, so about 25%. Of course, if the cars pollute more, we get a smaller share. But our industry produces as much CO2 as the entire Europe, as much as air freight and sea freight together. And we walk around and look at performance, as if that is not an issue. Cotton, we think it's biological. Well, 90% is genetically modified. Cotton is accountable for 18% of the global pesticides and 25% of the insecticides on the world. Not so much better. I'm not talking on water at the moment. The numbers are enormous. Leather, 85% made with chromium. About in total, if you add up the water, the leftovers, and what's left in the leather, it's about one-third each, about 11 kilo per 200 kilo of leather. 200 kilo of leather you're getting from about 1 ton of cow skin. And here I'm not talking methane and all these other things. So just to give you a feel, well, I believe we don't look at the full thing. We're stuck in this idea that our company is a small player and we can improve a bit the performance, the color, the whatever, and please the client. But there's something coming up to us which humanity as a whole has never seen before, never ever in history. That's why we don't have models for it. That's why it's not in our business plans. Because when we build a business plan logic, that was 250 years ago when we thought, oh, it's a small closed system, we just look at the stuff which concerns us. Clothing collection, some people might think it's great to collect clothing, and I think it's great. We have an existing system, it's not like plastic collection we need to invent, or glass, or paper. It's, especially in Europe, it's between 50 and 70%, Germany is about 70%, 1.1 million tons every year. US is very low. Now the interesting part is, where's that stuff going when we throw it in that greenish box? Half of it is not reusable. It typically goes in a downcycling process and used for isolation cars and so on and so forth. The other half goes in third countries, mostly Africa and Eastern Europe. And those countries don't have a collection system. They don't have a way to get rid of this stuff. So what happened? It's either thrown on the street or it's burned in front of their houses. Did we ever check what happens if our stuff is burned in front of our houses? Do we want to have our kids around that fire? I'm not pessimist, but I think we need to have a reality check where our priorities are set. Just 4 more numbers. Order of magnitude, I talked about the 10 billion, so we add another 50%. Or in my perspective, I hope I will see the tripling. I know my average age I can reach, and my doctor says I'm still pretty healthy, so there's hope. 75% of the ocean coral reefs, which is like the source of biodiversity in our oceans, might entirely be extinct or strongly endangered. 25% of the terrestrial species threatened by global warming, and I put the sources behind it. You can check with the guys. I took different ones, so at least 3 out of 4 should be perfectly right, and the other one, order of magnitude. And we have more plastic in weight swimming in our ocean than fish. And we seriously believe we can do that. I'm talking 30 years here forward. I'm 52 now, so that's less than my lifespan. And interesting enough, while I'm saying we don't know, if you look at the Global Risk Report the World Economic Forum is publishing now, these are the wise guys. These are all our CEOs from the top companies around the world, plus the presidents. They publicize every year a report. And that report forecasts, I took the 16, you can download it in the internet for free. Likelihood of a water crisis, 39.8% in the next 10 years. Well, I've been in Pakistan 2 years ago. How many people live in Pakistan? Any idea? Give me a number. Pakistan, one of our manufacturing countries. So how many people live there? How much? Oh, that's a lot. 50 million? It's actually 200 million. It's one of the sixth, but it's good. It's the first time I see somebody going in excess of the real number. It's one of the six biggest number in population in the world. 70% of the water is used by the textile industry. Main water supply is one big river, the Indus, coming from the glaciers of the Himalaya. I don't need to talk what's happening to the glaciers with global warming. We all know it. But the simple fact that Pakistan most likely by 2050 in the next 30 years, because of the size of their families, the culture, the forecast, they will be from 200 million to about 320 to 350 million. It doesn't need to be a scientist to say, we will have a problem. And I'm not talking about their nuclear weapons and their threatening potential. Once you bring people to a water crisis, it's probably only take 2 to 3 days until we are really issue. So we know. We know, looking at, they publicized a chart on the impact of the biggest world's risks and the likelihood. And as I said, you can download it. It's for free. It's accessible. This is the collective intelligence of all our leaders. If you go on this, I'm zooming in this top corner, so the highest impact, the highest likelihood. Oh, interesting, you find filer of climate change. Now, I don't do Trump bashing now, but at least 2016, all the world leaders and all the company leaders of the major corporations have said that is our biggest issue. And they have the water crisis, and you have biodiversity there. So the key question for me is, well, if we know, and if you go one further, this is actually the timeline of the different years. So you have 2007, 8, 9, and so on. And this is, I think this is like, yeah, this likelihood, this is impact. And what you can see, this is still the impression of our financial crisis. So all these guys have been scared of finances. But the moment that impression, that trauma, whatever from the financial crisis was gone, well, when you see from the colors, it pretty much turned into ecology, social, it's a red, and geopolitical risks. So we know. So the interesting question for me is, why don't we look at it? We know the problems, we know the detail, we know the data. What we have done in the recent years, what we have done 2 years ago in December, we actually had a look at what have we done. And we try to be honest, we are by far not perfect, but we had a look first at the human history. The company is 30 years old, so we just took a slice. These are things we had done in history. I don't deepen this, find it in the internet. But mainly interesting for us was what's happening 30 years backwards if we know what's happening in the next 30 years, just to get an idea. And that idea revealed things like, oh, interesting, we discovered this thing of ozone hole. I don't know who you remember of you. I was born, I do, but you are much younger than me. So. But we discovered the ozone problem, and we have banned the CFKs, or found a global agreement of CFKs within 5 years from the discovery of the issue. So if anybody tells me, and I was told a lot of time when I came to this industry and talked on sustainability, people say, yeah, but we are different, that will take time. Well, once humanity recognizes it, there's a shitstorm coming, and we haven't had any social media at that time. I would bet my ass that's 3 years or 2 years now. If we really discover an issue and we discover who is the root cause, we will face issues. I talked about people, but with these people, we also increased our footprint. When I was born, we were pretty much balanced. So humanity's 3.5 billion consumed roughly the stuff the Earth could regenerate. Of course, the industrial nations much more than the others, so there was a high imbalance, that's another discussion. But basically it was 1.0. We pretty much polluted as much as nature could tolerate or compensate. Now we're at 1.6, and I'm always saying, who of you spends every month 1.6 times his monthly salary? Anybody? No, but it's funny, nobody does it. But here we're doing it. And by spending more, it's obvious that we actually burn the baseline. So the compensation capability of what we are using is actually shrinking while we're doing this. And again, this is largely unbalanced. But when we see the other countries coming up and picking up, this number can soon be at 2.5. And at the same time, we have seen fantastic technologies. Now, if you could zoom into it, we also have put everything. You find Brexit, you find Donald Trump, but you also find technologies like launch of Airbnb was only in 2008. What else we had? WhatsApp in 2009. We had Fukushima. Apple presents the iPad in 2010. So humanity has tools. We have ideas. We have technologies, which we couldn't even imagine 10 years or 15 years ago. So the key question is for me, well, our current industrial cross-finger scenario is, if I may simplify, mainly that material cost is what we pay for. Well, we don't pay for the social issues we create in those manufacturing countries we are choosing. We're not paying for the ecological damages most of them we're creating. We rather choose countries where the law doesn't forbid them. And we don't care what we do with 23 billion pairs of shoes when they are worn. But the interesting question is how valid and how long these assumptions are still valid. And as I said, I joined 2016 the industry. Conservative guess was this. Everybody's saying, yeah, come on. Keep on dreaming. Yeah, you want to save the world, but nobody cares. So 90%, yeah, there might be a bit of discussion on the social issues when one of the manufacturing buildings collapses again and we all feel concerned and then we go back and pay a euro for a T-shirt. End of product life cycle, nobody really did bother except some exemplary candidates in the industry. And I believe we need to look at this because this is the outcome of Adam Smith. This is the outcome of the assumption that we all need to take care what's happening within our fences. And what I want to show you now, and this is the last part, what I want to show you now, how I believe, how we believe, this is really shaking. Because when you look at the two assumptions, well, assumption number one, client is only interested in fashion and performance, not the side effect of the production process. Well, I don't know if you read the BSC study, Boston Consulting Group study last May, published for the Danish Fashion Summit in May last year. It basically says to continue the growth trajectory, the fashion industry needs to address its environmental and social footprint. Fashion brands with targeted initiatives will be best placed to improve their environmental and social footprint and counteract the rising cost of apparel production. They will pull ahead of their competitors with innovative ways of doing business and efficient production techniques that minimize the use of water, energy, land, as well as hazardous chemicals. Again, you can download the report. Interesting stuff, couple of hundred pages. Now, guess what? A trend has never been invented by consultants. If one of the big 10 or even big 5, I don't know where Boston Consulting Group is, jumps on this, the wave is already there. No consultant firm has ever created this. And the second assumption, we don't care what's happening afterwards. Well, interesting enough, I copied the text from the National Sports Strategy of China. You can download the WTO document. China announced in mid of last year that they will close the borders for garbage plastic and especially mixed textiles to get in. And when you dive deeper, you realize that about 87% of Europeans collected garbage in plastic has been exported by the same containers who brought our material in. And all of a sudden, close. They decided by the end of 2017, and they did, China will forbid the import of 4 classes, 24 kinds of solid waste, including plastic waste from living sources, vanadium, and so on, unsorted waste paper, and waste textile materials. Download it, it's an interesting read. So when I go back again and look at, well, sustainability is a niche topic, that was 2016, let's have a quick summary, that's more a trick film, of 18 months. When is your next collection going in the market? In about 12 months, 18 months? Okay, so let's look 18 months back, and you know what can happen in 18 months. In January, Greenpeace enforced the PFC after years of discussion, the PFC ban on the outdoor industry. I mentioned the BSC publication in December, the China's closing border. Let's have a quick look at this year. In February, the UN climate conference reveals that the textile industry creates more CO2 than air and sea freight together. And they talk about it. in March, Globetrotter, and this is just examples. I'm not paid by Globetrotter, but Globetrotter introduces the better choice labeling. So you go in this shop in the future, and they will tell you, they will label those products which comply with a minimum of X criteria from a set of 10 sustainability criteria. Might not be perfect, but at least the consumer can go in and have a choice. Now, just imagine retail does it everywhere, and all of a sudden has criteria. In April, the CEO agenda came out, worth downloading for the Danish Fashion Summit, a recommendation paper, and I'll show it to you in a minute, which basically says 7 existential strategic steps each company need to do, 3 immediately and 4 more strategically to be implemented in the next couple of years. So just think about your collection in winter 18 and 20, because that's 18 months forward, roughly. Our belief is that those numbers might still be around 60 and 70, and they probably flip below the 50% range and the next between 1 year and 3 years. And this is a fundamental flip. This is not a mega trend. This is not a fashion thing. This is something which is irreversible. But what we need to recognize, and because we're in Germany, you always need to quote a German, so I quote Albert Einstein, who basically said we need to realize that we can never solve the issues and the problems with those same kind of thinking or acting or technologies which we have created. We need to rethink things. We need to rethink why we do things in business. And to show you CEO agenda quickly, this is a recommendation to all CEOs of our industry. So consultants last year, straightforward into the boardroom now. Supply chain traceability, efficient use of water, energy, and chemicals, and respectful, secure work environment. Plus, strategically, sustainable choice of material mix. So design in recyclability, next step going towards a closed-loop system, and then the promotion of wages, so the social factors, and then, of course, the kind of digital stuff and the force, the potential of technology we have. So I'm fundamentally believing we haven't seen the big picture yet. We need to recognize there's something coming up which is a must-have. I called it the blue ocean for a very simple reason. I don't know who knows blue ocean theory. At the moment, we are with the sharks. I mean, this is the basin of sharks. You're all sharks, all shark companies. You know, everybody tries to get a piece of a market share of somebody else. The beauty in blue oceans is it's not only peaceful and nice, but you can capture space. This one will be decisive in the next 3 to 5 years for everybody. And those one who start first will capture the markets which are there. We shouldn't talk about growth in 1 or 3 or 5% in market share. We should look at a complete redistribution of markets. And this redistribution, and this list is not complete, but this redistribution of market, and I agreed with Greenpeace that that's pretty much complete about a year ago, because that's a bit our guideline. We need to look at CO2, water, energy. We shouldn't just make a bit of greenwashing and say, oh, we're great. Sustainability is a clear definition. Sustainability means we can do what we're doing endlessly without harming and without creating an issue that hinders us in the future to continue. So we need to really run through all the things. We need to run from climate change through water, through chemicals, through garbage and recycling. And the thing I want to close with is not an advertising pitch of Sympatex. I'd love to do it, but I was forbidden. It was to show you how simple it is. And this is the part where I'm sometimes getting a bit angry, so apologies before. In 2016, we recognized the CO2 issue and we decided to go CO2 neutral. It's damn simple. You sponsor projects and plant trees. We have done all our homework before to reduce the CO2 footprint to the minimum. We have optimized production and everything. And the remainder one, we just build trees. At least we can say, as much CO2 we blow in around out of fossil fuels, we build trees, we plant trees in Africa to combine two national parks, a bit of social problem on top, a social solution on top. But basically, we can say we're CO neutral. We are not part of that 8%. and everybody could do it. I calculated, again, I love big numbers, so I did the big numbers. It's about 3.5% cost to the entire industry to become CO2 neutral if we just go that path. Now, of course, we will have plenty of trees, then probably different textiles out of trees, but just to show how easy it is to do the first steps, this is super easy. Doesn't cost you technology, cost you peanuts. We bought it actually out of our profit line. We didn't charge it to the customer. We have tried closing the loop. We invited a Greenpeace activist, a couple of bloggers, and a few crazy guys, 2 days in the mountains, and said, well, let's try to make a closed-loop jacket for the outdoor business. The perfect jacket, the one which everybody wants to have from a technology performance point, but still, we get plastic bottles in, we get textiles out, pure polyester, so we can recycle them. It took us a couple of months, and we had it. You can see it on the stand. And we said, yeah, what about shoes? So we tried to figure out how you can build shoes, and we will never start producing jackets, and we will never start to produce shoes, but we want to show to our clients how easy it is. So we designed a 90% shoe based on a shoe, kid shoe based on 90% of recycled material. By today, everybody could do this. Only about 15% of the PET bottles in the world are recycled. The rest is burned or thrown in the ocean. There's plenty of raw material. It's just our decision. So I want to close perhaps with two thoughts. One is 80 billion textiles is plenty. And 23 billion pairs of shoes is also plenty. But if we put them in a closed loop, there's no issue. But until we do that, we should rethink the search for growth. And our belief is this is actually where the market will be in the next 3 to 5 years. We will see a complete redistribution because we cannot cope with 15 times shoes to the moon and back and all the consequences. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. To get your free ticket for the next fair or listen to other presentations, go to www.performancedays.com. Copyright April 2018 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.